From the studios of Boise State Public Radio, I'm Gemma Gaudet. The city of Boise is rewriting its zoning code at a time when its population has exploded, due in part to millennials, many of whom don't want a car or a single-family home. That's all according to Max Holleran, author of Yes to the City, Millennials, and the Fight for Affordable Housing. Holleran sat down with our Morning Edition host, George Prentice, to talk about some friction to YIMBYisms, or Yes, in My Backyard, and how more cities, like Boise, are rethinking density.
Fascinating book. Congratulations. At the heart of Yes to the City is, and walk us through this, is YIMBY. Yes, in My Backyard. Walk us through this. This is more than just a trend.
It is. So Yes in My Backyard is a reaction against the idea of NIMBYism, which is not in my backyard, and which for a long time has been a big force in neighborhoods in the United States and elsewhere, against building things that will deplete the value of people's homes in certain neighborhoods. Yes in My Backyard is about making more developments, particularly dense residential development, apartments, row houses, duplexes in American neighborhoods. Most American neighborhoods are zoned only for detached single-family homes, and this movement has really been about getting rid of that zoning code. And it attempts to build more housing to address housing shortages and to hopefully make housing more affordable through increasing the supply.
You mentioned San Francisco, but also in the book, Boulder, Seattle, Austin, Boston. And for our listeners, if they don't think this doesn't apply to Idaho in general and Boise in particular, they're not paying attention.
I think I could write a whole other book after the pandemic of cities that have just exploded in their populations and in desire for more housing. Places that are beautiful, have a lot of natural assets like Boise, that have seen tremendous amounts of growth in population, and also astronomical rises in the price of housing. The thing is that not only has housing increased, but rent has also increased. So for anyone trying to hang on in cities that used to have a pretty stable population, they are now really confronted with a large population shift that's happening in the U.S., which has a lot to do with people working remotely and with people moving to places like Boise, and the housing market absolutely lighting on fire. As we said before this interview, people in Boise have been confronted with 4% rises in the value of their house per month, not per year.
By the way, you chronicle that in large part, millennials have pushed YIMBYism.
Yeah, so previously you would see a lot of housing movements framed as anti-gentrification, and you'd see it in class terms. You'd see it as neighborhoods that were trying to hang on as a working class refuge, as a place with affordable rents or affordable home prices for people buying. You would see that sort of as a sort of a battle between people of different economic positions. In many ways, we've seen housing now chronicled within the terms of generation. So it's very much about millennials versus people in the older generations. Millennials are disadvantaged in some ways because they experienced a lot of wage losses during the 2008 crisis, and that extended for almost a decade. And also a lot of them have delayed family formation, buying houses, having children. And they have a kind of existential framing of the housing crisis as something that has disproportionately affected their generation.
And to that point, and in your book, you chronicle this as well, there has been friction.
There's a lot of friction. Millennials are also a very urban generation. They're a generation that is comfortable living in apartments. They're more comfortable with not owning a car, taking mass transportation. And they're not necessarily enamored with the single family house suburbs of the past. And so for them, changing zoning is not such a big deal. It doesn't have the kind of threat of destroying the character of a neighborhood, or letting in more people isn't seen as something that's really going to overwhelm public services. So the idea of building a kind of six-story apartment building is not such a kind of confronting thing for people who are under 40, but it could be a really big deal for people who have grown up in the smaller suburbs of the past. And so the idea of what a city should look like has changed a lot in the past 20 years. And millennials are pushing for much more densification. And that's something that sometimes rubs people the wrong way.
Let's talk about the future of YIMBYism and crafting, or the possibility of crafting, some kind of coalition, and how fragile that process will probably be.
YIMBYs have gotten in a lot of trouble because one of their main goals is to have growth in areas that already have a lot of economic development, that are already doing pretty well. So one of their main goals is to make wealthy communities, places like downtown San Francisco, parts of Washington, D.C., downtown Seattle, accept new housing, particularly small apartment buildings. But they've also done that in some neighborhoods that are gentrifying. And so they've run into two different kinds of roadblocks and two different groups of people who oppose development. One are the people who they label as NIMBYs, so not in my backyard people, who just say, look, we have a great neighborhood, our schools are filled, the streets don't have any parking, and we do not have room for the apartment building that you are proposing. That's one group, and that's one group that they really vociferously fight against. The other group is when they go into places that are not as socioeconomically developed. Mm-hmm. So you could say a gentrifying neighborhood. And then they propose a development there. And those are groups that say, look, we have a neighborhood that's just barely hanging on here. We have people who cannot afford to pay rent. We have people who can't afford to buy. And if you build more here, we'll be pushed out and we'll experience displacement that's happening in a lot of cities. So you have two kind of adversaries that have fought against this movement. The sort of bottom line for the movement is that all housing will add to the available stock and that will decrease prices. But there's a lot of questions about that, particularly when you're building in places that have a really fragile economic status, where basically the neighborhood's changing really dramatically in terms of demographics. If you build new housing, you could potentially push people out.
And there it is again, right? The word, how fragile it is, and all of the nuance that any community has. And then you layer something extraordinary like a pandemic over the possibility of density. And that's an entirely new factor.
Yeah. I mean, in some ways, the YIMBY activists who have gotten very successful in American cities are asking people to rethink some very fundamental parts of American urbanism and to live closer together with their neighbors. America is not a place that traditionally likes that. People want their own land. Right. They want their own backyards. On the other hand, it's very cultural, which is that people, you know, they want their own kingdom, their own domain. And living in an apartment building is something that a lot of people have trouble embracing. That was true before the pandemic, but with the pandemic, you get all these epidemiological fears. You get fears about people coughing in the elevator. You get fears about the heating and cooling system and the germs that are coming into your apartment. And so it's a rough time in some ways to convince people that they want to be closer rather than farther away.
The name of the book is Yes to the City. It is published by Princeton University Press, and he is Max Halloran. My sense is that the needle is moving on this with every passing day on this issue.
Absolutely. I think it's an issue that will be with us for a long time as rents rise and people look for more sustainable alternatives to suburbia. I think that an hour-long commute seems like something that's not only not a lot of fun, but also not very economically sustainable.
And that was Max Halloran, author of Yes to the City, Millennials and the Fight for Affordable Housing, speaking with our Morning Edition host, George Prentice. Let's stay with the idea of YIMBY, or Yes in My Backyard. In the city of Boise, leaders are working on a major rewrite of zoning codes, and YIMBY is playing a big factor in this. Our Morning Edition host, George Prentice, sat down with Tim Keene, Boise's new director of Planning and Development Services, to find out more. Let's take a listen.
So let's talk about where we are, where you are, and your colleagues are with the Boise Zoning Code rewrite. You are waist deep in public input, and we see the surveys and the community conversations and the open houses. I'm really interested in your sense of if you will, the pulse of this. It's wonky, but I've also heard some moments of excitement from some people in town.
Thank you for asking the question. We've gotten great turnout at our public meetings recently over the past couple of weeks, really full houses of people interested in discussing these things. You know, this is something that cities don't do often, you know, rewriting their rules entirely around development. And it's really important right now in the moment that the city is within to do this as good as anyone that's ever done it, you know? So I think the excitement you mentioned has to do with the potential of this and where we stand right now with regard to the rules that we're proposing.
So as a layperson, I've been trying to wrap my brain around the not just the process, but perhaps the intentions here. So tell me if I get this right or not. I see code, or at least the possibility of code that can be comfortable, or code that encourages a smart development in a open market. Code that when a developer offers livability, or, you know, then there's greater options for those developers.
Mm-hmm. We had been out, as you know, the city, this actually was before I got here, but the city had been out with a version of the code that there was a lot of concern about. And as we stepped back, paused, and made changes to come back to the community over the past couple of weeks, the thing that you're putting your finger on is something that was really important to us, that we seek to achieve those things that people that live in the city care so much about, that we design the ordinances, design the code to accomplish those things, which means not that you give over all the development rights in the city just for development's sake, but that we actually tie people's rights and abilities to build to the things that we seek to accomplish, like housing affordability and, you know, being careful about how we build such that we're building in a way that conserves energy and water, you know, these kinds of things that are so at the forefront of what people here care about. So we now have a version of the ordinance that's seeking to do those things.
I'm sure I'm not the first person to tell you that the missing piece of the puzzle in the Treasure Valley for at least a couple of generations has been a robust public transportation system. I have to assume that that's key to this.
It is central to the things that we felt were important regarding how this ordinance is designed. So much of what we've come back with are regulations and permissions in terms of density and building types and so forth, in direct relationship to its access to transit and people's ability to not drive so much, because this is so central to our success here. The first version of the code, I would argue, was really just taking a one-size-fits-all kind of approach to the whole city. So we've really tried to shape it directly in relationship to where are we investing in public transportation? Where can we reasonably assume more people will be able to drive less because they'll have access to better public transportation, you know, and the ability to walk and ride their bike? That is so important. This particular code that the city's adopting needs to directly connect how we will grow as a city to how people will get around. So what you'll see in this, George, and everyone that checks it out, will see that direct connection between non-driving transportation and how we allow people to build in the city.
I've been diving into what is now called YIMBYism. In other words, yes, in my backyard. And what I'm reading from community to community is that it's not just a trend. It's very real. Can you confirm that YIMBYism is very possible here?
Well, it's heartening that there are so many people in this country and in cities across America that have gotten engaged in what is called YIMBYism. And for me, I say that because it's really people that are welcoming of more people, you know, in their city and seeking to have it so that lots of different people can live in a city. And what's heartening to me about that most is that the reality is a city gets better with more people. What makes a city different than a rural place or a suburban place is that the qualities that make a city distinctive and successful involve more people. So what's been a real challenge for many cities is that as cities start growing, people seek to thwart that, having more people living there. And so the YIMBY side of things is saying, hey, no, that's what makes this place what it is. We must seek to add people, because that means the more people that live in the city of Boise, the more reasonably we'll be able to get around, for instance, without a car as much. We'll all have cars and we'll drive some, but many more people will be able to drive less. That makes the situation better. And the more people that are walking and biking and using transit, the more opportunities we'll have for business, the more we'll have vibrant streets, you know, the more we'll have opportunity for beautiful architecture and all those kinds of things. So the more we can protect nature, because we're taking, you know, what typically would be demand that would go further and further into the desert, and we're seeking to put people where, again, the place gets better with them there. And so I think this whole movement really, I guess, across the world, certainly in American cities, around how do we as a community come together around growth and welcoming more people is so central to us being successful. I will say about this, George, it really isn't, because typically you would contrast YIMBY with NIMBY, and I don't think that's very helpful. You know, I mean, the thing about it is we all share this. You know, we are very much seeking to come to solutions that will work for this city, and we all have to work on it together. And so I don't see it as this side has one idea and this side has an idea that's the polar opposite. I feel like there's a lot of consensus around the things we have to do here. We've got to get moving on those. So one example that I'll give you as it relates to this new version of the ordinance compared to the original version, and it relates to the YIMBY thing a little bit, is the first version basically had one proposal as to how to get denser as a city. And that one proposal was that all of our single family zoning districts would go from permitting two individual dwellings would now be allowed four. And that was it. That was the one proposal in the original ordinance. And we've seen from other cities a real lack of progress when it comes to that one particular thing, which is adding permitted density in single family zones. And so for that to be your one approach in the original ordinance, didn't it all seem right to us? So what we've come back with in the second version is a whole collection of ways to address this. We still address it within the single family zones, but we're tying it to affordability, where you're getting additional units. But we're also concentrating on allowing more density along our main corridors, where we have our best public transportation. We're creating a new district on State Street for the locations that will have the most significant transit stops that allow a lot more density and require some affordability once you get to a certain height. We're creating something we're calling strategic infill, which is in our single family neighborhoods. We basically create the parameters around which you can build right away up to four units. And then if you do affordable housing, you can get up to as many as 12 units. So we're adding a provision for some single family like zoning. It's called R2. It's a little bit denser single family adjacent to those transit corridors. So there's like five or six ways within this new version that are directly designed to deal with the particular city we have to address this issue of density and affordability. So we feel like this one, in a practical way that's much more appropriate for Boise, gives us the chance for way more success. So, I mean, this is an example of where I think sides that might be seeking more density and sides that are seeking to stop it can come together around specific ideas that just make sense for this city. And I think that's, George, where we've gotten a lot of excitement around this new version, because people are going, oh, look, they're actually proposing things that make sense to me as to how you deal with things like density and mobility in a city.
We don't get too many collective opportunities to do things smarter. We get them individually, but rarely do we get collective opportunities to do things smarter.
Yeah, this is such a, that's why it's such an opportunity for the city right now, is because this isn't, as you say, it's not like this is project by project. We're not moving from project to project. This is about the fabric of the city. You know, what is the city we're seeking to build? You and I talked about this in our first conversation. There's places that you go where they're very dense and you go, wow, this is wonderful. I can't imagine a better place. Because they were, it's the product of the way people built. And in new cases, it's has to do with the intention around it and the strategicness of it. But then you go to other places that are very dense and they're a complete mess because it was a project. So we're not dealing with project right now. We're dealing with fabric, and that is the fabric of the city. And how do we accommodate growth such that the product of any individual product is in furtherance of a city that works better for everybody? I'm glad to be here because I think as people are coming to these public forums, and as I said, we're getting great turnout, mm-hmm. it's a fascinating thing to see people really dig into, wow, this is the city we're making together, rather than, you know, fighting over this or that related to a project or one specific thing. That's the thing about the first version of the ordinance, which had this one solution. It just had to do with four units in every single family lot. Now we've got half dozen of them, you know, that really relate to the exact city we have.
This things like this should be hard. It's not as if it's fun every day. things this important actually should be hard, and people do need to carry the water.
No doubt. That's why this, you know, famously some cities have gotten into this process of rewriting a zoning ordinance over the past 10 years and given up because it's so hard, you know, because there are such different perspectives, opinions, and people involved in the process. Building community like this is not easy. We have a hard job ahead of us, but we also have a very unique city to take care of.
That was Tim Keene, Boise's new Director of Planning and Development Services, speaking with our Morning Edition host, George Prentice.